Hey, Rob Ryan here, and I just finished the next great episode of Entrepreneurial Thinkers. I hope you'll check it out and enjoy it as much as we did making it. If you are into venture capital, if you're looking to get into the venture capital business as an employee or as a partner, this is the show for you. We discussed kind of the two sides of the venture capital world in the modern era, traditional investment side, and then the platform side, the operational side. And that's where we put a ton of energy in this conversation with my great longtime friend, Cuco Vega. He's a thought leader, an active leader in this space right now at Leap Global Partners as their head of global platform, but cannot miss it. If you need to get into the industry, looking to get into the industry, want to better understand the industry that's there to serve you as a founder, as an entrepreneur, maybe you're an experienced entrepreneur, but you're looking for something different. It's time to pivot in your life or your career. And you want to take all those entrepreneurial thinking experiences that you've had as a founder and put them to a different purpose inside the real economy where you live and work, this is the episode for you. Deep dive, lots of information, great tips, a bunch of stuff we're going to put in the links for you so you can have some actionable follow-ups. But again, really fun show with a really good friend. So I hope you check it out. See you soon. Hola, hello, hi, bienvenido, and welcome back to Entrepreneurial Thinkers. Today, I'm super excited to be joined by our friend and show alumnus, Cuco Vega. Cuco's joining us from home in Guadalajara, Mexico today to talk about entrepreneurial thinking in venture capital. So let me tell you a little bit about Cuco. Currently in his role as Leap's head of platform, he brings a new and pretty holistic approach to VC. Before joining Leap, he co-founded Bexy, which was a B2B ad tech platform, ran operations and product development. With degrees in design and engineering and a very well-rounded experience in international operations, Cuco brings an entrepreneurial thought sense ability to his work in venture capital, but he also brings a very broad, mature perspective to innovation and entrepreneurship overall. As a Mexicano-American, he has lived his life as a bridge between Latin America and Silicon Valley, and he's really committed to helping portfolio companies and their founders, other entrepreneurs, thrive while also being an investor's best ally. His experiences and his perspective make him an invaluable asset for startups and venture capitalists alike, and make him one of my favorite friends to hang out and talk about this industry with, because he just talks it real, he gives it thoughtful perspective, and he brings a great, honest, authentic energy to every conversation. So, Cuco, welcome, brother.
Hey, how's it going? Nice to be back.
It's good. I looked yesterday, it's 41 episodes between when we saw you last and when we see you today.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We are grateful to have you back. And so how are you? How, everything good?
Yes. Before we start, I would love to highlight the fact that this episode was not planned. So the fact that it's the episode 111, and for those who know me, or, and if not, you will get to know me, this means that this was meant to happen right now.
That's awesome. And you texted me that earlier today. And as usual with me and you on this topic, I was like, I have no idea what that means, but I'm sure he's going to explain it when we get on the call. So it's all, I'm grateful. It just brings more good energy to the show. So with that, playing on the 111 theme, let's just drop right in first question. Question number one, which we're going to dive into a lot of detail, but I want to start us up at the high level, right? Like, Why is the venture capital industry in need of disruption, or why is it kind of ready for a fresh approach to how investors can distribute capital in today's entrepreneurial economy?
Well, I think it's not just the VC industry that's going to, you know, be disrupted, that it's being disrupted. Last week, I was in Miami for the VC Platform Summit, which is pretty much where all the people that, like me, work in the platform role within VC go, you know, learn from each other, have drinks, etc. So we were talking about how many of our firms are already, for example, using AI in order to make better decisions, in order to move faster, be smarter. And a lot of people are already working on it, right?
Okay.
So just the same way that this is happening in VC, this is happening in a lot of different industries, right? We are at a pivotal moment, not just in business, but in human history. So the same way that any other industry will be disrupted, of course, VC will be as well. And but I think the huge difference between VC being disrupted versus other more traditional industries is that probably in these other more traditional and bigger industries, more people will lose their jobs than in VC. Because to be honest, it's very hard to even get a job in VC in the first place, right? Yeah. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of disruptiveness in terms of people losing their jobs and things like that, like in other industries. But what we'll do is it will give firms advantages, or it will give the opportunity to smaller firms to be competing at the level of bigger firms, right? Because now you're not going to need an army of analysts and investors in order to find the best, analyze, make the best decisions, et cetera, right? Now, AI is going to be able to allow you to do all of that with a smaller team. Okay. So I think we're gonna see some exciting things happen in the industry thanks to this kind of disruptiveness.
I love that. And you just validated something that I talked about on our other new show called Stoppage Time that I do on Friday afternoons, like a little brief, like my opinions on what's going on in the world each week. And I talked about AI and my personal opinion, just in general terms, not necessarily related to VC. And I think, as you alluded to, a lot of people in the general public and in the business world like keep portraying it like it's the great replacer. And my angle on it was, I think maybe you and I are aligned in this way. I think it has the potential to become the great differentiator and not necessarily the great replacer. So I tend to lean in with you with what you just said about VC is I think AI comes along and it's for those who use it to its capability, like it allows them to separate themselves. It allows the smaller firm to level up and compete with the bigger firm. It allows people to kind of be better at what they're trying to do for their founders. Or that's awesome to hear, because you never know, right? It's like there's so many people that think, no, it's going to wipe it all out and we algorithms will just make all the investments for us. And you're tending to take more of a humanistic approach.
I mean, I would love to, but to be honest, I do think that it's probably not going to be as easy to replace those, those jobs that will be lost or whatever. But definitely, I think the opportunity is more for us to get into. The opportunity is for us to reimagine the future for humanity, pretty much, right? What does work actually mean when everything is going to be done, most of the tasks are going to be done by technology and all that. But we would be probably getting into a completely different topic, right?
That could be another show. We might just have, Deanna was so excited that we booked you this week that she was like, maybe you could have him back like once a quarter. Like you could just be like my regular recurring sidekick guest on a bunch of topics, right? So maybe we'll have that conversation too. All right, before we dive into the next question, kind of as a follow-on, I thought it'd be a good idea as I was listening to you. We've got kind of a broad audience of listeners, especially in this new format, right? My thesis is that the world needs more entrepreneurial thinkers across all segments of society and industry, not just more entrepreneurs or investors. And so we have people that are listening that are in education and politics and healthcare, et cetera. Might be helpful for you and I to stop and let's educate a little bit. When we say you work on the platform side of the venture capital industry, or you are the head of platform at this particular firm in your current job, let's talk about what is platform in the venture capital industry and kind of what does it mean?
Yes. So number one, just like most people that are probably listening, the first time that I heard platform, I thought something completely different. And I think everyone who is in a similar role than me agrees. But anyway, so platform is pretty much an area within a VC firm that takes care of adding value in any other possible way besides money. So pretty much a VC firm invests capital in a company, and then the platform team takes care of everything that they can do to make that investment successful, which means it can be from literally working side by side with a founder, introducing them to potential clients, potential new investors, doing community management for the firm and all of the portfolio founders. There's a bunch of things from marketing to business development to talent to fundraising. So some companies, like in smaller firms, there's sometimes one or two people doing all these things. Sometimes there's huge things. If you look at the biggest firms that we all know, they have big teams, right? With people specialized on different aspects of, you know, how to help founders. But there's also some other firms that realize that they already have something they can focus on in terms of how to add value, and they just do that. There are platform teams that only do talent.
Okay.
So they only help their companies with getting the best talent they can, so they can take that weight off their founders so they can focus on building and selling, right? Or there are others that focus completely on business development and sales because they want their founders to just focus on building, right? And then they help them with the commercial side. So in our case, it's a little mix of a couple of things. Number one is everything that has to do with fundraising and everything that has to do with business development. Because what we do is we leverage our network of investors, institutional and corporate investors as well, to make sure that we can somehow leverage those connections to help the founders. So that's in general platform.
Okay, awesome. So I think that's going to be super helpful. It was helpful to me just because as you described things, I kept thinking like, oh, that's true. There are some firms that do it this way versus that way. All right, so let's take that and dive into kind of the follow-up on the original question. What are some better, fresher ways that you working through the platform side of venture capital can create better outcomes for all parties involved, right? So for your LPs, for your investors, as well as for the founders.
Well, I think that there's different things. From my perspective, and just because I know that every single platform team works different, is different, and adds different value, and also has different priorities. When I joined Leap, we were actually in fundraising mode. And that fundraising mode was supposed to end after 6 months. But the truth is, last year, in 2023, you know, the market and a few other things that happened in the industry made it very hard for both founders and investors to raise capital. So the way that we started adding value was more through activating our own community to attract new investors, to make our own investors more aware of what we were doing and what we were building. And then that was the focus of last year. But okay, Now that we're almost done with fundraising, then again, we shifted gears and now we are doing things to be prepared, you know, to open up again the pipeline and work more on getting deal flow, right, Looking at companies, start investing again. So, you know, there are different things that we do right now in Leap. So my role goes from literally overlooking and doing an overhaul of our investment process, which now is completely new, almost fully automated. We're using AI to analyze some of the most basic quantitative elements of a company, right? So that our team doesn't have to do a lot of manual work and a lot of back and forth on things like scheduling calls,
sure,
Making sure that a company is within our investment thesis, and just basic things that would take a lot of time and resources from our team, and that now allows our investment team to focus on what their most valuable,
focus on their strengths. So the best investors,
exactly,
should be investors. They should worry about the things that investors think about all day, every day, right? And that might not necessarily lend the same skills to like the operational side of things.
Yeah.
So you come along and you're the flexible Swiss Army knife of operational things as the firm evolves. That's fascinating.
Yes. And you know what, Rob, to your point, I was actually thinking that my role goes from being a Swiss Army knife to being a very, very specialized tool sometimes, right? So it depends. But pretty much I think what it does is it helps us work closer to the way that startups work.
Yeah.
And that also helps all of us to understand better why some, you know, sometimes some of our companies work in a certain way and they respond in a certain manner and they request help in a certain way as well. So, you know, that kind of helps us to be more aligned to how our companies are.
That's pretty cool. And I mean, I've said this in our friendship for years about you particularly, as I thought you would, I was very confident, I should say, that you would be very good at this side of the table because you understand the other side of the table, right? So you have this kind of sensibility about you that maybe the average investor who was never an employee at a startup or was never a startup entrepreneur themselves, like never created anything from scratch, they might lack. Doesn't mean they're better or worse. It just means they're different. And then the different is the strength. So that's awesome. And playing on that, I was going to ask you anyway. So now it's been a while. Like you've been on this side of the table for a while now, very successfully. And so having lived on both sides of the table, entrepreneur, founder, and now on the investor side of the industry, tell us about some of the differences in being creative and entrepreneurial as a founder versus being creative and entrepreneurial as an employee or as a member of staff at a venture firm.
Well, it's very different because I feel like when you're a founder, you're actually doing two roles. You're doing the job of a leader, right? And that job includes having all the stress of making payroll, sell, keeping your employees happy, you know, having the right culture, making sure that, you know, your team is has like the right complement, like your executive team complements well with you, that everyone is getting the same vision that you have for the company. Like all those things are literally a full-time job. But on top of that, you also need to have the job of coming up with solutions to the problems that you're solving for your clients, having the right vision for the product, and just solving the day-to-day stuff that never ends.
Right.
Right. And on the other hand, when you are not a founder, like right now, my role, right, it not having all those responsibilities of the leader job allows me to focus and to have this, I don't know what's this, maybe this peace of mind, yeah, right? Of knowing that I'm not responsible for nothing but, you know, doing my best at work and get creative and solve problems and build stuff and communicate and, you know, create things with more people. And so I think the main differentiator is that now I am giving this safe space almost, right, to just go wild and solve, you know, and create and do what I actually do best. So I'm not saying that I didn't do best when I was also a leader, right? But no, I think that is for me the big, huge differentiator.
So a little bit, if I heard you correctly, right, a little bit of removing some of the constant noise, right, of those operational pressures, right, the payroll, the next deal, the fundraising, the whatever, right, that's always there for a founder. Like it's just constantly omnipresent. So when removing that, you have found, and this is interesting because it's you and you have these unique skills and talents, but you have found that it has allowed you to kind of almost like focus back in and reignite your core creativity. Like because you were creative as a founder, and you also happened to run like a creative business in what your business was, but like you were creative as a founder, but then that noise is like overwhelming all the time. And so maybe it muted kind of some of your instinctive creativity. Now, my sense of listening friend is like there's a liberation. There's like a little bit of a lighterness on the shoulder, like a little bit of freedom to like, hey, I can just go in there in this sandbox now and I just get to be creative because somebody else is worried about payroll and somebody else is worried about like the next raise and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, pretty much. That's pretty much the difference.
Yeah, no. That's a big one, though. I mean, so let's flip the same kind of question on the other side of it, though, a little bit. Because, you know, one of the knocks from founders and entrepreneurs to VCs or at VCs is this idea, like, you don't get me, like, you don't understand me, right? You haven't been in my shoes. So I'm curious, have you found opportunities to help? And I'm not any one particular person or people at Leap per se, this could apply to any firm. Have you, because of your background and your skills, now sitting on their side of the table, have you found the ability to help them to kind of start better understand the creative mind of the founders that they invest in, or to better understand the pressure? So are you a little bit of like a, hey, my VC partners, I can help you guys get better at understanding the other side of the table because of my ability to translate. Have you found that to be true or no?
Yes, definitely. Well, and to be honest, I think that's one of the reasons why they brought me in the first place, right? Because they wanted actually someone with that experience, and also not only to really connect with our own founders, right? But also to give a different point of view. So when we're looking at companies, there are things that as a former founder, as a former designer, as a former engineer, I can bring to the table, even just by looking at the same things that they're looking at, but from a different point of view, a different perspective. And to be honest, it happens both ways, because I also get to see things in a completely different light coming from them because of the way that they, because of their background, sure. Right? So I think it's a very good combination, and it definitely works.
That's fascinating. So you, let's go back a little bit. You mentioned at the top of the show, you had just come from an event in Miami that was on the platform side of the business. And I know from following you on social media while you were down there and cheering you on online as best I could, I know you spoke on a panel. You gave a presentation. My apologies. You gave a presentation. Tell us a little bit about what you talked about and why you talked about that topic for that audience.
Well, the topic was on how to define your platform strategy using your unique strengths and differentiators. And it was pretty much telling the story that we went through in the last year and a half, right? When I joined, we had all these crazy ideas of how to help our founders, right? We pretty much wanted to do everything possible in order to help our founders. But of course, we realized very quickly that that is not feasible, right? So what the talk was mainly about was about the steps that we took in order to focus more what we do for our founders. So pretty much, number one, we realized that we had this huge network of investors, both in Latin America and in the US. And we realized that every single type of investors could add different value to our founders and to the firm. So we started creating more focused programs, for example, something very specific for our family offices, something very specific for our angel investors and former founders that are now investors, right? Okay. So that's what it was about. And that is something that more and more firms are realizing, because this is something that we learn from our own founders. When I started, I told them, you know what, before we actually begin, can I just talk to our founders and see what they want and what they need? They all came with a bunch of different stuff, but something that I will never forget is a lot of them said, all of my other investors have already given me discounts for software, credits for other software, and all these things, but I want access to your network. Can you introduce me to this investor? Can you introduce me to this company? So that's when we realized that we didn't have to create anything new, at least not to begin, right? That we could actually begin with something that we already had and just leverage that and not only help our founders, but also help our own investors, right?
At the time, you highlighted earlier that that moment, that was your primary role, was to build community and activate your own investors, because you were trying to raise more money, and in part by showing them, like, hey, look what we're doing. Like, hey, let's bring you into the fold a little bit more so you see the real value we're providing. And then hopefully that gets you excited about investing. That's fascinating.
Yes. And you know what, Rob? Something that I believe is that in the near future, venture firms are going to have to start differentiated in that way. Because at some point, I mean, this sounds a little idiotic, but at some point in places like Silicon Valley, New York, Austin, Boston, LA, people start to talk about how money becomes a commodity, right? So I think firms are going to have to differentiate it in this way so they can get the type of companies that they want to get. Like a great example of this is actually, there's a firm called Day One Ventures. And what they do is the founder is a very, very experienced PR, right? So she had her own PR agency and everything, and then started investing. And now what they do is they invest, and what they offer to their companies is they run all of their PR because they recognize the value that for an early stage company that is about to launch a new product and needs to get clients, or it's growing and needs to find the best talent, or is about to raise and is about to find, you know, and it needs investors. Okay. This is great for them, right? So I think we're going to start little by little seeing firms that are like that, very specific in the way that they can add value to the founders and the portfolio companies.
That's interesting. I tend to agree with that, right? I mean, you could foresee a day essentially platform became the entry point or the gateway drug to what becomes, it kind of recasts effective venture capital as a service company.
Yeah.
Right? Or as a services company. And then once you go down that path, then as you say, there's, hey, really good at PR. And so we're going to lean into that. I'm thinking of here in LA, there's a firm, M as in Mary, M13, where a friend, Ann Barber is a friend and she's a partner there. And if I'm sure they invest in lots of different things, so I'm not minimizing them at all, but I'm highlighting this one. Truth is, like, I think that M13 is like particularly good at consumer facing and consumer industry type stuff, bigger brand consumer product companies and whatnot. And their roster of investors and advisors and mentors and all, they're really good at that, right? And so then they go out and they invest further in those types of companies and that further enhance. And that's kind of like, okay, that's what they're really good at. Doesn't mean they couldn't invest in something else, but that's what they're really, really good at. And then they can provide unique value inside of that industry sector. And you're looking, you might wake up one day where you might have a firm that's essentially almost like married to a law firm and really good at all that stuff. You might have a firm super good at marketing and social media marketing or those types of things. That's fascinating.
Yeah. To me, it makes sense that if you're going to have different people in your cap table, what they all have in common is that they give you capital. But if each one of them can also add some different kind of value, then that's great.
Yeah. No, totally agree. Because as you said, it really, with founders, it really is about like, okay, the cash is the cash that not, you want the human value, but the cash is the commodity that has to be spent. It's still green, et cetera. Right. But it's that I want the real value. I want you to really provide me value. And this seems to be a way to get there. Going back, you said something in the beginning, and I would love to have maybe an example or two to tell a story, but you said you found yourself like leaning into your design expertise and your engineering expertise to use things like AI to start to improve the processes or the workflow inside of Leap when you got there. Do you have one or two stories, an anecdote that could tell us like, here, let me give you an example of how when we started AI to fix this process, it wound up better for the founder or wound up better for our investors. Do you have any stories like that?
Yes. I mean, I think I have a story with a couple of interesting.
Okay, that's awesome. And we don't, and we can keep people nameless in privacy. We can protect people's privacy. That's okay.
But. Oh no, it's fine. This is a good story. So it's fine if people names come up, you know. So one of the things that that we have been focusing on, you know, as we started getting closer to the official close of our fund, was to completely redesign our investment process, because we realized that from the first moment that we met a founder to the moment where we either send the transfer to their bank account or said no, it could be a long time. And there could be a lot of interactions with the founder, a lot of calls, right? So a lot of moments where probably the founder is like, okay, this is it. This is going to be the call, and it's not. And then again, another call, and it's not, right? So we realized that this was happening, and that, of course, we had to make this way more efficient, right? Not only for the founders, but also for our own team, because right now we're a small team. And if you want to keep a small team that's still nimble and able to move fast, then you have to be able to get rid of all these manual tasks that don't really add great value, right? Like sending emails back and forth to schedule calls should not exist, for example.
Yeah, that's all. It's just extra noise. Yeah,
exactly. So we started by pretty much breaking down the whole investment process, right? Like we pretty much analyzed this in a first principle basis, right? Where we pretty much broke down the whole thing into its most basics. And then we realized how many of these things could be automated, how many of these things didn't actually need a person to do it anymore, right? So then we started thinking about how could this look like if this was the ideal process and with the current tools that we have right now, right? So for example, we realized that number one, we were having our first calls with founders without even knowing if that company was within our investment thesis. So we only do, for example, one example, we only do seed and series A. So we wouldn't know until we were in the call if this person was raising a pre-seed or a series B or, you know.
Ah, okay.
So little details like that, they can waste both 1 hour of our investment team and 1 hour of that founder, right? So from little details like that, right, to the fact that, for example, we were waiting until the very end of the whole process to start writing an investment memo with all the analysis and the recommendations for our advisory committee to make a final decision, right? Instead of just starting it from as we were getting new information, you know, add to this document, right?
So like it populates itself on the way. Yeah.
Things like that. Yeah. Basic things like that. Right. And then we also realized that a lot of things we were doing in a lot of things we were waiting for something to be done to take the next step. And those steps didn't even depend on each other. So they could just run in parallel, right? So after that huge analysis, I could tell you that now no one from my team needs to interact with a founder until we know for sure that the company is within our investment thesis, that is raising the right check, you know, for what we invest in. They're at the right stage. And we already analyzed a summary of this company, right? So just by doing that and happening all of that automatically saves my team a lot of time. And since, you know, most VC firms run on management fees, it also saves them the need to having to grow their team when you don't need it, right?
And as you said, it's preemptively being helpful to the founder. Some founder might experience it and feel to themselves like, oh man, I just want a human. Come on, I just want to get through the filter. But the truth is the filters that you're setting up, the is more thoughtful. So hey, founders, I don't want to waste your time either.
Yeah.
Right? Like I'm gonna help you with your difficult process of fundraising by not wasting time talking to us if we're not a good fit. So I'm gonna filter that stuff out before we even bother wasting that's fascinating.
Yeah. And that's a great point, Rob, because the first thing that a founder sees when they go to our application form is exactly our investment thesis. It literally says, this is what we invest in. If you are not within this thesis, we cannot invest. Yeah. Right?
Which again, someone could take that as like, oh man, you know, they're trying to automate the process so much I don't get to them. But the truth is, the reality is, hey, young founder or immature founder or inexperienced founder, like by setting it up this way, we can be more responsive to the people who really do need our attention. So if you fit our thesis, we're going to be better able to support you and explore this relationship because we've filtered out all the other noise. We're not just chasing every Zoom call. No, that seems to make sense.
I personally, like, this is in my personal life and in my work, I think that there's nothing better than a transparent no or yes, and that's it. It's hard. I feel like sometimes it's very hard for investors to just say no when it's almost very clear that it's a no, right? But this is something that now that I've been having, like, some of the most painful things that I've been having to do now is founders that I put through our pipeline, I'm the one who personally emails them and says no, right? So I know that it's hard, and I know that it feels hard, you know, and even knowing that that is the best thing to do, it's still hard.
But the first couple of times you had to do that, how did that feel, Mr. Founder?
It feels bad. It feels really bad. Because it feels bad because you know that no matter what, the founder is going to be disappointed.
Right.
But I feel like at least by being as clear as we can, some founders have actually replied with, thanks, I really appreciate it that you're telling me why, or that you're telling me on time, or that you're responding quickly at least, right?
No, that's fair. Yeah, what an interesting experience for you to have to go through. All right, so I want to hit on something before we kind of get to the last section of the show that I really want to explore a couple here. This is the big one. So, you know, between us, our relationship is everything to me. Right. And, you know, in my personal life and in my professional life, relationships is everything to me. It's the greatest currency that we all have. So talk to me about, from this platform point of view, and platform as this value add to the investment side of the business. Talk to me about how you see relationships and community playing a central theme in the venture capital industry, say, you know, over the next 20 years.
I mean, in general, relationships are the key to making businesses, to doing businesses, right? Relationships, you have them with your own employees, right? With your own teammates, relationships you build with your clients, relationships you build with your investors, right? So that's just how it has always been. But I think that now relationships are also the base of the way that people are doing businesses. Right. Mainly since a lot of companies started being created on top of communities, right? We know of a lot of businesses that now have started by building communities first and then launch their product, their service, or whatever they're doing once they have this audience or this community. So I think now more than ever, relationships, community building ecosystems are super important. And I would actually even say it's in that order, right? You start building relationships, right? Then those relationships, those multiple relationships that have something in common can create a community. And then in order for that community to go somewhere, right? In order for that community to have some legs, then you have to turn it into an ecosystem, because an ecosystem has a purpose. An ecosystem is self-sustainable. Every part of or every member in an ecosystem has a role within it, and it adds value to it somehow, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, think about nature outside, right? If we take bees out of the equation, like, we die, right? So, like, that's like, there's the tiniest little community member, and we're over here as like this big member of the community. And the truth is, if we take them out of the ecosystem in too large a number, so many other parts of the ecosystem fall apart. That's a really beautiful way to describe it. Relationships, community on top of that builds ecosystems, and that's what creates the opportunity for thriving businesses, or thriving, growing, as I love to say, entrepreneurial economies.
Yes, and you know what, Rob? I think one of the things that has actually helped me click a lot with my team is that they also understood the value of turning our own community into an ecosystem, right? So it was very easily, and just like you said it, the, you know, what our inspiration was literally how natural ecosystems work, right? Right. So how do we make it so that our LP invests in the firm invests in the portfolio company, but then the portfolio company can add value to the company that's owned by our investor, and then it becomes a circle. And then there's a bunch of other cycles of sustainability happening around our ecosystem as well, right? So the same way that we keep adding value to our investors, they can bring in some new investors, and they have done it. They recommend other investors to come and join us. And founders can recommend us to other founders. And, you know, that's how ecosystems work, right? So it doesn't matter how small or how big your community is. You can always turn it into a sustainable ecosystem that works to your business favor, your firm's favor, or your personal project's favor.
Love that. Tied back to the title of this, you know, newly rebranded version of the show, Entrepreneurial Thinkers. You know, I believe the world needs more entrepreneurial thinkers, not just more entrepreneurs or just more investors. It seems like, you tell me if I'm right or wrong, it seems like entrepreneurial thinkers are well suited to the platform side of venture capital. Is that true? Like, do you think entrepreneurial thinking types of personalities, people who are innovative, problem solvers, think outside the box, think about ecosystems, like it seems like these people would be a great fit to this side of this industry?
I agree 100%. I agree, definitely. And I think it's because, you know, our role represents doing so many different things, but especially it means this ability and this willingness, this desire to solve problems, build new stuff, you know, build solutions or build whatever needs to be built. But also it's the initiative of not needing someone to tell you what to do, right? So being entrepreneurial within your own firm is a huge advantage because, you know, you're obviously your investment team is going to be focused on something very specific to their role, right? So no one is going to tell you, you know, how the companies need help. So it takes initiative to define the way that you're going to make sure that you're in touch with your companies, to make sure that you're always ahead of the game, to make sure that before they ask for help, you know where they're at and you can come first and offer that help, right? But also, you know, the fact that a lot of these things just happen without planning, right? Like just solving issues, you know, putting down fires and stuff like that. That's part of the job pretty much. So
right. Perfectly suited to that. I mean, it sounds fun, right? I mean, it's, you know me, selfishly, I never liked the word entrepreneur. I always thought it was a weird word, right? So basically, I've just made it, right? Former entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs are now entrepreneurial thinkers in my worldview. So, all right. So we're going to finish up here, and I'd love you to help me maybe create a couple of actionable takeaways for some people that are listening. But we just got all our entrepreneurial thinkers who are curious about VC as a career. We just got them really excited. They're like, oh gosh, I feel like I belong there. So can you please, from the other side of the table, right? Can you please maybe give one or two suggestions on how people who see themselves as in the platform side, maybe like how can they find their ways into those careers? How can they find or get in, position themselves to be in those jobs?
So number one, before I give you any advice, I would recommend that the very first thing you do is you go to vcplatform.com, which is the global community. It's a global community for people who work on platform roles within VC firms. And then the second thing that I can tell you is there are multiple ways of being part of a platform team. You can be in marketing and be in a platform team. You can be in communications, community, business development, talent. You can be a chief of staff. You can be in operations, any kind of operational role. So this can give you an idea of how wide, you know, the range of roles within platform can be. Yeah. Not all the people in platform have the word platform in their title, right? And there are companies that don't officially define a platform team, but they do have someone who's the director of marketing, someone who's doing community, someone who's doing all these roles that I mentioned previously, right? Something else that you definitely need to know is, even knowing all this, it's very hard to find roles on VC in the mainstream job platforms. Like, it's okay. Very hard to find, especially if you're already ahead in your career.
Right.
Most of the roles that you're going to find in VC, let's say on LinkedIn or Indeed or those websites, are going to be super junior,
okay.
Right? So if you are someone that's already way more seasoned in your career and can bring like a more senior value to a company in a platform role, which is honestly what I did myself. When I decided to join VC,
I was just going to say, like, if you're a reformed entrepreneur or a recovering founder, like, or yeah. just someone who wants to change their career for life reasons, for their family reasons, what economic reasons, there's a whole bunch of reasons why mid-career you may say, I want to pivot out of this startup founder role and I want to get into this.
Yes. When I joined VC, I realized that I was not going to be an investor because I didn't want to restart my career from zero.
Yeah.
You know, with all my experience, yeah. you know, and with my background and everything, I was not going to do that. So I realized that there was actually a place in VC for me and for someone as experienced as myself.
Yeah.
So I will also share with you some newsletters.
Awesome.
With VC jobs, and a couple of them are actually focused on platform VC roles that people can look into, but mainly try to look for firms that you like, that you admire, and see if you have any contact, anyone that you know that's working yeah. in the industry. Unfortunately, if this is too real, that's how most people sure. get into VC,
yeah.
through relationships. So you gotta build those relationships. You gotta go to those events on VC, those happy hours, those meetups, all that stuff. Like we just said a few minutes ago, community.
We'll even put in the links too. We'll get the newsletters from you, and then we'll even put in the links, for example, like I'll go back and have us find the link to that event that you were just at, right? So even though the event just happened, the website will still be useful to people to look at next year's event, right? And they can start to think about that. So I'm curious. I want to finish with just a pure curiosity question from my end. You were in a whole, like an entire event, and you were with some of our great friends and our besties, like Jolyn, who hopefully will listen to this and we did her proud today, right? But like, that was just about platform. And it wasn't that long ago in my worldview that like, or maybe I'm just boomerish age over here, platform wasn't even a thing that long ago. And now you're at like an entire conference of just trying to get better at it. So would you say like, the majority of firms in the US are now have a platform functionality of some sort, or is it only still a small percentage? What is out there?
Well, first, the community, the VC platform community, it has been around for about 7 or 8 years, I believe. So I think that there's a difference between companies having platform roles. Because I believe most companies have at least one platform role. Like at least, you know, if they have a chief of staff, right, that's a platform role. If they have yeah. a community manager, that's a platform role. All the roles that I've already mentioned like 3 times. So a lot of them maybe don't intentionally or consciously have a platform team. But they do have yeah. those roles.
And that's awesome. I didn't know. I mean, 8 years seems like a long time. Truth is, like 8 years ago, I was living in Chile. That's long ago, right? When 4 of those years were sucked up by a pandemic, like 8 years isn't that long ago. But that's amazing to think from 8 years ago, where this wasn't even a concept, to like a vibrant global growing community. And the fact that you would say that whether they have tightly defined platform or they have platform type functionality, that almost every firm has those. That's impressive. And it seems to lean into what you were saying in the very beginning, which is like, this is how it's going to be.
Like, this is the next iteration of venture capital. We're not really disrupting it, and I shouldn't have even used that word initially. It's just an evolution, it sounds like. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Good for you. Hey, buddy, this is a blast. First of all, I called you and then didn't call you back, and then you didn't call me back. So this is our chance to talk with each other because we missed each other like 3-4 weeks ago, right? Which is us. That's classic us. That's okay. And we don't even think twice about it. We're like, I'll talk to him at some point, right? But this was a joy. And again, thanks for helping a brother out on a tight notification. But I know that this conversation is going to be valuable. I'm not surprised at all. You've developed yourself into essentially kind of a leading voice from your own humble, you know, still learning, still growing perspective, but you're a smart cookie and you've always been a bright guy who gets it pretty quick and figures it. And clearly you've done that here in this space. And so I know you're going to have an outsized voice in this part of the industry for, as long as you want to be, no matter what you're doing or who you're working with. So I'm super excited to see that, but thanks for helping us inspire some more entrepreneurial thinkers in the world today, bud.
No, thank you so much, brother. Always a pleasure. Obviously, your kind words.
Is there any way that people can get a hold of you or follow the firm? Or again, don't worry about the VC platform stuff. We'll put that in the website. Yeah. But there are some ways people can follow or find you.
I mean, you can find me on LinkedIn as Cuco Vega. You can find me on Instagram as Cuco Vega. And you can find Leap Global Partners on LinkedIn as Leap Global Partners or at leapglobalpartners.com.
Awesome. All right. Adios, muchacho.
Take care, brother.
And as always, we thank you so much for listening. Today's show was recorded in Los Angeles and produced by Deanna Bernal in Mexico City. You can always find, like, follow, subscribe, and share our show on Spotify, Apple, or via any popular podcasting platform. As well as find the new video version of our show now available on our YouTube channel at Entrepreneurial Thinkers. And as always, you can follow along our various social media platforms for fun and informative clips and content at Entrepreneurial Thinkers on most platforms. And if you'd like to connect with me, your host, you can find me at I Am Rob Ryan on just about any social media platform. Gracias and thank you.